Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The intersection of America's science skills and careers requiring those skills is reaching critical mass. Will supply meet demand? We'll talk about that in a couple of moments. But first, the official celebration of St. Louis's 250th anniversary is over. The city went all out to mark this semi-quincentennial. How well did we all do in observing this important anniversary and presenting the city's rich history? Did we meet the objectives set? With me to look back over the year are Aaron Buddy, the former executive director of STL 250, the organization that oversaw the year-long celebration. She also served as volunteer director after joining the United Way. She'll be with us for a few minutes by phone. Alex Enan is the editor of NextSTL.com, a website source for information and commentary on St. Louis. Jody Sowell is director of exhibitions and research for the Missouri History Museum. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you, Don.
Hi, Don.
Aaron, I'd like to begin with you. How did it go? As you look back, what's your analysis?
You know, we feel like thousands of people, just from all parts of the region, and all walks of life really joined into a celebration where they had just hundreds of opportunities to figure out how they wanted to mark this moment, to reflect on the past, kind of check in with where we were today, and look forward to the future. So the events that we planned were planned with an eye toward that kind of diversity and being able to engage just all types of folks, and feel like we are very successful in doing that.
Of course, we can't look back on the last year without remembering what happened in Ferguson. How much of a disruption, or was it a disruption, into the flow of events during the year?
Well, you know, the events in Ferguson and the death of Michael Brown, were tragic events. Our group really went into the year knowing that we wanted to have a celebration, but we also wanted to encourage the community to have a conversation. And so I think that what we have seen over the last 6 months since that tragic event is people having conversations in lots of different ways about lots of different things. And that's a real positive move forward, to have people digging into some of our tough issues. To have people who previously didn't really have an avenue to lend their voice to the conversation, really having one as the conversations move forward. In terms of the events that we had scheduled for STL 250, those events, so many of them were grassroots events in our neighborhoods and our communities and with the thousands of nonprofit organizations that we're so fortunate to have in St. Louis. And their events were able to go on in, again, all of their diversity, from learning and talking opportunities to opportunities to celebrate the things that they felt are best about St. Louis.
I know among the objectives were to create some buzz across the country about St. Louis. Do you think that was accomplished? Did we do the right things to generate that buzz?
STL 250, as the year started, I think we really did see a nice outpouring of attention from around the country about the 250th milestone, about some of the forward-moving things that were underway in St. Louis, about some of the achievements that we have had in the recent past. And then I think the conversation continued. From Ferguson and other topics. So people were certainly talking about St. Louis, but more importantly, St. Louis was having a conversation about itself.
I guess it was the New Yorker front page, cover page of the Arch, half of it black, half of it white, and the split at the top. I mean, the entire world saw that, and the entire world knew about Ferguson, and that it was not exactly the image anybody wanted this year in particular.
Yeah, and I'd have to agree with that, but again, I think we have so many hundreds and thousands of people talking about how do we need to move forward, what are the major issues that underlie the unrest, what can we do as a region, as local communities, as individuals to really address them?
We can't talk about the last year without talking about the cakes. If anything generated buzz, that was it, or they were it. That was really quite incredible, the way people reacted to those cakes.
You know, we one of our objectives for the celebration was to really be able to have events that STL 250 really got behind and raised the dollars for and helped to coordinate, that people from across the region who were either living here or visiting could really engage with. And I think Cakeway to the West really hit it out of the park on that one. 256 cakes, marking 256 really diverse locations throughout the 15-county bi-state region. And we know that tens of thousands engaged in them in a formal way, either through the STL 250 app that was created by one of our Arch Grant startup companies, Candy Lab, or through Facebook users groups that engaged thousands of more in pop-up communities. So it was just really neat to see not only people's pictures and experiences, but to hear them talking about new places that they hadn't been before. And new appreciations that they had for both the assets and the diversity of our region.
Well, no matter how you look at it, Aaron Buddy, it was quite a year. And I'm sure many people are thankful to you for the role that you played in orchestrating what happened during the course of this past year. Thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on your new job. And I'm sure people are thankful for the role you played last year. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Lots of volunteers also to be thankful.
Oh, I know. That's always the case. But we appreciate your role once again, Aaron Buddy.
Thank you.
Now I'll turn to the two gentlemen in the studio with me, Alex Enan and Jody Sell. Alex, let me start with you. The same question to you. How do you think it went last year?
Oh, I think Erin's to be commended with what she did with, I think, what ended up being, you know, relatively few resources. What I didn't see was, you know, there was a nice plan that was put together and the cakes kind of took off. I have three children and they went crazy for the cakes and went on excursions to find the next one all the time. So we had these kind of viral things that really took off. And so what they were able to do with relatively limited resources was pretty incredible. I tend to think that we missed an opportunity to have a bigger discussion. And we do have discussions that were kind of thrust upon us with events in Ferguson and some of the other things happening in the region. But what I don't see is quite that buy-in yet. And obviously, we don't know what the outcome of some of these efforts are going to be. So it was a very contentious year. I think we started the year hoping for a big discussion. I think it got off to kind of a slow start and some worthwhile celebrations, but not a lot of substance. And we were forced to really take on bigger questions as the year went on.
That surely is the case. Jody, how about you? How do you look at the past year?
I think we, at the History Museum, we saw a lot of that substance and a lot of those conversations that Aaron was talking about. Our 250th exhibit, 250 and 250, just today surpassed 300,000 visitors, our most visited exhibit since 1927. People were clearly hungry to talk about St. Louis's past, but also to talk about the future. And we were having a lot of those in-depth conversations about race, about growth, about transportation policy there at the History Museum, and people were eager to have those. So I think it happened in pockets, and I'm proud to say that the History Museum was one of those pockets.
And it continues. Your exhibit continues through this weekend until this weekend, correct?
That's right. So Sunday is the last day, so if you haven't seen it, you need to come out then or see it again.
All right, or come back in 50 years. I want to talk more about the future with you two gentlemen in a moment, but before we let go of the past, I think you'll enjoy listening to this. Our own Maria Altman put together a sound picture of St. Louis history in conjunction with the 250th anniversary. I think you'll hear this now, and it will bring back some memories.
What is St. Louis known for? It's hard to know just where to start. But beer seems as good a place as any. The huge influx of Germans here in the mid-19th century helped popularize lager. And by 1900, St. Louis began transporting its beer nationally from the Lemp Brewery and Anheuser-Busch. Budweiser beer, the king is second to none. The image of huge Clydesdales pulling a beer wagon helped make Budweiser synonymous with St. Louis. And even though Belgian brewer InBev now owns AB, the famous horses still make appearances in Super Bowl ads and on opening day in Busch Stadium. This is a baseball town, after all, where we even named the new Mississippi River Bridge for the late, great Stan Musial. The Cards have 11 World Series championships, second only to the Yankees. Yogi Berra grew up on the Hill, so did Joe Garagiola, and several great announcers have called St. Louis home.
Smith corks one into right down the line. It may go!
There's Jack Buck.
Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
crazy.
And his son Joe Buck carried on the tradition. There's former player Mike Shannon. Bob Costa started here at KMOX. And let's not forget, Harry Carey spent 25 years calling cards games before he wound up in Chicago. But St. Louis has made its mark in other ways, too.
He made it. Charles A. Lindbergh, Lucky Lindy as they call him, landed at Le Bourget Airport, Paris at 5:24 this afternoon.
Lindbergh and his plane Spirit of St. Louis were a global sensation when he completed the first nonstop transatlantic flight on May 21, 1927. It ushered in the age of air travel. And decades later, St. Louis was part of the space age.
Liftoff.
That's the launch of the first U.S. manned spaceflight on May 5, 1961. McDonnell Aircraft in St. Louis produced the space capsule that carried Alan Shepard that day and all the astronauts in the Mercury and Gemini programs. Several groundbreaking musicians were born in St. Louis or spent time here. Josephine Baker, Scott Joplin, Tina and Ike Turner, and Nellie, to name a few. Only Chuck Berry, who released Johnny B. Goode in 1958, continues to live and perform here.
Deep down in Louisiana, close to New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the evergreens, the student law cabin made...
The city also produced several noted writers.
I was born in 1914 in a solid three-story brick house in a large Midwest city.
That's the beat writer William S. Burroughs reading from his semi-autobiographical novel, Junkie. He was born and raised in St. Louis, as were Kate Chopin and T.S. Eliot, who were of a very different era. Every St. Louisan knows about the 1904 World's Fair. Held in what is now Forest Park, it commemorated the Louisiana Purchase and featured new inventions like x-ray machines, baby incubators, and ice cream cones. 40 years later, it was immortalized in the film Meet Me in St. Louis.
Kids, that's the St. Louis Arch, the gateway to the west.
With the exception of the Griswolds in the movie Vacation, going up in the arch is a must-do for any visitor. The National Monument commemorates Thomas Jefferson and the city's role in U.S. westward expansion, and it is recognized the world over as the symbol of St. Louis.
At St. Louis Public Radio's Maria Altman looking back on some of the more interesting aspects of St. Louis history. Jody, we have to take a break in a moment, but I'll ask you and Alex. You know, we have a very rich history and a lot to be proud of, but sometimes I have the feeling, maybe you do too, that we either are reluctant or feel we have this inferiority complex that people talk about in trying to convince the rest of the country as to who we are and what that past is.
Well, I think sometimes we don't realize what a fascinating place we live in. So that's one thing we've heard as people leave the exhibit is say, I never knew St. Louis was so fascinating. But part of that fascinating history is also the more troubling aspects, the darker aspects. I mean, I enjoyed that piece a lot, and I could listen to Chuck Berry all day, and I watch Meet Me in St. Louis every Christmas with my family, just like a good St. Louisan would. But there are other stories, stories of race, stories of slavery, stories of Pruitt-Igoe that are equally fascinating and equally important, equally studied around the world for St. Louis's role in these aspects of our history. And that's one thing that we wanted to make sure we got in the exhibit as well, was to talk about those pieces of our history as well.
So, all of the things you mentioned make us what we are today, right, for better or for worse.
Right. And, of course, the people who are oftentimes the most proud of St. Louis are also the ones who are most willing to say, okay, let's look at the tough issues as well.
How about you, Alex?
I couldn't agree more, and those are some of the kind of mental notes I was making as we listened to this, is I think there was an opportunity in the past year to take a little more ownership of some of these difficult issues. And Ike and Tina Turner were mentioned, and their studio was maybe a block from where we're sitting now, and it's a parking lot now. There's nothing there to show people where that was, and a lot of cities would celebrate that and really, you know, own that history. And Pruitt-Igoe, we know, those of us here know what it looks like. It's an urban forest with a falling down chain link fence.
Still trying to figure out what to do there.
Right, but we've disowned it. And I think until the Pruitt-Igoe film came out, really celebrating a lot of the lives that were there, but also talking about the difficulty, people here didn't talk about that for maybe 30 years. And so we've kind of shoved these things in the background. And I think we'd be stronger if we really owned it and understood our place in American history a little bit better.
And that history is not just not owned, it's being forgotten. I oftentimes mm-hmm. talk to college students, and I will ask them, many of them who have lived in St. Louis all their lives, and I will ask, how many have ever heard of Pruitt-Igoe? Mm-hmm. Not know anything about it, but have heard of it. And I will get one or two hands raised. And I noticed on tours of the exhibit this year, that's happening more with adult groups, too. That history is being lost, and it's a difficult history, and there are many different lessons and conflicting lessons, but we certainly shouldn't lose it.
You've got your work cut out for you.
That's right. That's on me.
That's Jody Sell, Director of Exhibitions and Research for the Missouri History Museum. He's with me in studio, as is Alex Enan, the editor of NextSTL.com. We'll look to the future when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Alex Enan of NextSTL.com and Jody Sell from the Missouri History Museum. Alex, let me turn to you. I've read a number of the things that you have written in conjunction with the anniversary, and you've looked ahead. And I find a largely positive tone in what you say. You see a lot of things that...
That's good to hear.
a lot of things that are positive.
No, there are substantive things that are changing in St. Louis, and a lot of what I write about is trying to get beneath the anecdotal and the... you know, and the memories and stuff, and really understand if and how our city's changing. And one of the things I've written is this millennial cohort, the people 25 to 35, and it's just a reality. They're moving back to the city or staying in the city more than any of their generations before them in the last 80 years in St. Louis. So we have more young people choosing to live in the city in a large number. We have a positive the way you look at it is there's a positive net migration of that age group to the city, and in a city that's lost, you know, 500,000 residents. And so that's something that we have to see if it continues, but a real positive. We've tracked a lot of the building development in the city. And currently in the Central West End, you have either under construction or planned more high-rise buildings than we've built in 40 years. You know, there are big things happening in St. Louis, so there's a lot to be excited about if you look around.
And the future really is up to the millennials that you've talked about.
Yeah, and so we're I shouldn't include myself. I'm 38, so I pick and choose my generation depending on what I'm doing. But we're butting up against an older generation that has lived very well in St. Louis, and I think part of what lays over our entire conversation today is that St. Louis is a very easy, very gracious place to live. You can live here and not pay attention to your surroundings and just soak up a good life. I mean, we have beautiful suburbs. We have great schools, beautiful parks. In some ways, St. Louis doesn't require that you be engaged. And people have left the city and chosen not to be engaged in city politics or city issues. We've separated by race, and you can choose to live around people who only look like yourself. And it's very easy and very inexpensive to do so here. But I think we have a younger generation that wants to be engaged, and they care about those things, and they're looking for a different environment. And so that generation, the millennials or Gen Xers, the Gen X generation was actually the first generation to have a net positive migration to the city, and we've totally overlooked that group, you know. Mm-hmm. And they're engaged, but they're butting up against people who have led a comfortable life here for 40 years and, to be honest, don't necessarily see a reason to change.
Jody, who attended the exhibit of the 300,000? Were the millennials present, the Generation Xers, or were they mostly older folks?
They absolutely were. It really did span those age groups. And I mm-hmm. think when you look at some of the St. Louis urban architecture blogs out there and how many are written by young people, and they are equally fascinated with St. Louis history. Sometimes they're interested in different aspects, so they may be more interested in sort of architecture history and what buildings remain and what is being preserved versus some of the maybe literary history of St. Louis, for example. But they are very interested in St. Louis history and came out for this exhibit, which was exciting to see.
You've done something as interesting through the exhibit, and that is you're already planning for 50 years ahead. Tell us about the time capsule and some of the things that you've learned as a result of this project.
Sure. So we had this fun project called Dear St. Louis 2064. It's a chance for St. Louisans celebrating the city's 250th anniversary to write to St. Louisans celebrating their 300th anniversary. We said you could write anything, a happy birthday message, what you hope changes, what you hope stays the same. We've had probably close to, I stopped making my staff count, but close to 20,000 postcards have been filled out filled out from people in St. Louis, but all around the world. We've had some written in Japanese and other foreign languages, people who are visiting the city and wanted to write their note to St. Louisans of the future. And it has really become an archive of what St. Louisans are thinking about the city today. We saw big changes after Ferguson, for example, many more people writing about race and divisions of class and divisions of segregation. So we could see what the city was thinking about throughout the year through these postcards mm-hmm. that'll stay in our archives for 50 years, and we'll open them up in 2064.
Well, can you give us a hint of the of some of the things that they've been saying?
Sure. I brought a couple. Here's one from someone. It says, I hope that the city is less segregated, the neighborhoods, the schools, the communities. I hope that my son and daughter are happy, and if they are living here in St. Louis, they have seen progress with more integration, less racism, and more equality. I hope more fair housing efforts are made. I'd like to see all children safe and happy. I also hope that people see people as humans and not colors. I love St. Louis, and I know what we can be when we come together for our home's sake.
Is there data on that, perchance?
No, not on that one. There are on some. But we did, again, we saw a real shift. Though, truthfully, people were writing about those issues of race and segregation long before Ferguson, which I think is what Alex was saying. People want to have these conversations. We've just got to give them opportunities to have them.
Everybody, Alex, is talking about conversations. And, you know, it's a great word, and it's become perhaps overused. It's no good. It means nothing unless there are actually conversations.
Right. And this is what we're looking forward to the future and trying to be optimistic about what change can happen from mm-hmm. these conversations. And you have, and we could name lots of groups, but you have someone like Arch City Defenders who have been working for a long time. They didn't spring up after August 9th, but now they've got some traction and they've got some cracks in the system where they're being allowed to work and getting funding and support. And this is what happens when things change. You know, we don't, change doesn't happen when everyone suddenly agrees on something. You know, it's always a minority that pushes the change, and I hope that these conversations are giving some breathing room for these people to be not just encouraged but energized and supported. And I think some change can come. We need to make more room for that. And so that's what conversation does. And not all the conversations work, and not all of them are productive. But yeah. The absence of that, it kills us.
A lot of people fear change. And I think in this part of the country, it may be more pronounced than in other places.
Well, I think it goes back to you can be very comfortable here. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful place to live, whether it's the symphony or our museums or other things. It's not a very demanding place to live if you don't choose for it to be that way.
Everybody says it's a great place to raise a family.
Yes. And that's the time in life I'm right there. And that's the time in life where you really start turning inward and you just don't have the time or mental effort to be able to look out and think you're going to solve society's problems. Right. So it's a perfect place for that in a lot of ways. And that's it's our handicap, but it's also our strength.
Jody, back to you. Give us another sense, more sense of you, of what people are saying and what we'll all be reading 50 years from now.
Sure. So this one is actually from someone who was just in town for a little bit. She said, this is my mom's and my first time in St. Louis. We are originally from New York and came out so I could attend auditions for the Muni's 97th season. Although the audition was unsuccessful, we're sorry to hear that, I am glad we got to experience this city. Everyone has been very kind, living up to the friendly Midwestern stereotype you hear about in rude, fast-paced Manhattan. Before our trip, I only knew of the World's Fair, Meet Me in St. Louis version of the city, but now I feel like I have a slightly truer view of the real, modern-day St. Louis. I am proud of the people here who have stood up for justice in Ferguson and wonder what racial discrimination looks like in the future. Hopefully, reader, you do not even understand how such a thing could have ever existed and no longer worry about it.
You know, someone like this is extremely important to this community because they become ambassadors, don't they, when they go back to New York and talk about places like St. Louis.
Well, and you talk about that we don't always understand how wonderful the place that we live in is. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, those out-of-town visitors oftentimes do, because when we show them the things that Alex is talking about, when we show them Tower Grove Park or the great architecture that still remains or the fascinating diversity that is here and the people mm-hmm. that do mix between races and between cultures, they go back home oftentimes feeling a little worse about their city.
And Alex, we've got to tell the person who wrote that card that Forest Park is bigger than Central Park.
Yes, a lot bigger. Yes. Yeah. No, that's not surprising. And I'm not, I've been in town almost 11 years and didn't grow up here. And I'm still just astounded that, the living next to Forest Park isn't the most expensive land in the region. You know, we, these things are really incredible assets. I think that, looking ahead, I think a lot of what we try to do at Next STL is try to understand where community efforts and that civic conversation is going. And to bring it back to some of the other things we've been looking at, it's, you want to see where the political capital is going. And a lot of these questions, you know, there are racial questions and questions of crime, but a lot of it comes back to our political division. And so we're trying to keep a very close eye on just how we're spending our political and civic capital. And on that measure, we're not entirely optimistic, because what you see are these issues that come up that we all kind of nod our head and say, these are terrible issues that we really have to focus on. And then we turn around and see our best and brightest advocating for an NFL stadium or another $500 million project here or there. And I think there's still that political disconnect, and that awareness can't be diminished. So I'm hoping you get back to these conversations. I hope some of these activists and conversations over years demand that these conversations really change and that some of our priorities change. And that's what we're, you know, hoping for in the future.
Do you have a final thought before we say goodbye, Jody?
Well, I think it will be interesting to think about what will be remembered of this year in the future. You know, we oftentimes think events like Ferguson will always be remembered. What I've been telling people lately is they will be surprised by how fast they are forgotten. And if you want proof of that, you should go ask someone who's 40 years or younger about the mid-1960s riots throughout the country. That has been erased from our collective memory. Mm-hmm. It could happen in Ferguson, too, unless we keep talking about it and keep having these discussions.
We'll end it on that note. I want to thank you both so much for being with us, and also Aaron Buddy as well, for being with us earlier in the program. We've been talking with Alex Enan and Jody Sell, and I thank you both gentlemen for being with us. Good conversation. Coming up, as things are going, there will be a lot more science-related jobs than people have filled them coming up. The Science Center wants to do something about that. That's next on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.